ask and ye shall receive.
I didn't ask. Didn't ask for it.
But you could have.
But I did receive against my will.
You did indeed receive. Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that is going to wade through this with the best of intentions and be really careful with our wording.
Yeah.
I'm just scared. I'm scared, Jared.
I don't know, man. After Cook Islands, I don't think anything can hurt me anymore.
I'm your host, Stephen Levine, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared, help me.
We had to do it for an entire season. I think we can handle Philip.
That's valid. That's valid. Yeah.
We're always going to do our best.
Okay. Before we get into that, how are you doing? How's life? How was your week?
So, I know you just experienced this with me, so we'll just... I'm obviously telling this story to the audience. The saga of weird shit happening when I'm with Steven or on my way to Steven continues, because I got out of my car, like, 15 minutes early, mind you, before we're supposed to record, because I just, like, happened to be running ahead of schedule. And I just see, like, a terrier schnauzer mix running down the street in a coat.
Tiny puppy.
Yeah, between, like, probably, like, 10 and 20 pounds. And I just hear ka-kunk, 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 ka-kunk of its retractable leash hitting the ground and see a woman about a block and a half back chasing it. And I go, all right, guess I'm doing this now. And chase it into your back alley and into like a corner gate, which I am like, this could be its home. It could just be cornered and tired. It's been, who knows how long it's been running for. So like, maybe it's just out of energy and this is just where it needed to like rest. So I'm doing all my like veterinary training of like, okay, read body language, get low, sit on the ground, approach slowly. Kind of, yeah. I mean, this dog was not aggressive. I have dealt with aggressive dogs. Yeah. And still, like, don't freak him out. Certainly don't, like, make it so he tries to run past me because he's small and fast and the coat is slippery. We have a lady that we don't know who's trying to call animal control, but they're not picking up. So she called 911 and I want to be like, don't do that. You don't need to do that. This is not an emergency situation. This dog is chill and not dangerous. It's fine. And, you know, thankfully, the owner... That was its home, and the owner came back with her other dog. She only had him for about a month and had dropped the leash, and then the dog was afraid of noise because it had come from somewhere rural to living in Chicago, was still adapting, and the leash hitting the ground, their plastic retractable leash hitting the ground, was making enough noise to continue to spook it and think it was being chased. So it just kept running.
You know, as you do.
Yeah. It was a sweetheart, though. It was a sweet puppy.
Yeah, very sweet. So sad. I mean, a happy ending, but...
Yeah. I didn't want to patronize her, but, I did check for a collar, and the dog had no collar, just, like, the coat with the hook for the leash. And I was like, you need to get a collar, and tags, because, like...
Especially for a dog that's not used to this area.
Yeah. That's just... I will say, though, very smart dog in terms of, like, stuck mostly to the sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't running down the middle of the street until it needed to cross the street. So, like, well-trained, smart dog. But get... This is just, like, if you have a dog... Or even, like, a cat that has the potential to get outside, at least microchip the cat, you should probably get a collar with your phone number. I mean, I guess if you have a microchip in the dog, animal control can scan it, or a vet can scan it and call it, but still.
Yeah. I always just have the collar on there. Why not?
I'm glad it was a happy ending. My my buddy's dog, actually, this is a while ago, got loose, and he didn't have... Like the collar broke, which is also why, not to be patronizing to all of our listeners.
Immediately, Jared, going in.
I saw it too much. Get harnesses for your dog.
Mm.
Do not walk them on a collar. It's bad for their trachea, but also, like, if they're a bigger dog, it has more of a risk of snapping, and then they are just free.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a collar for identification, a harness for walks.
Sure.
But he was gone for, like, 2 or 3 days, and it was very scary.
My dog growing up did that, got out, got free, ran away, because we had moved from one area, built in another area, so it was staying with my grandma at the time, ran away back to my grandma's place where it had so much free space, and she got hit by a car, like,
Your grandma got hit by a car?
Not grandma. Dog got hit by car.
That's sad.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. That was about your family.
Yeah.
And you were in the flatlands of Minnesota, so like you could have watched that dog run away for 3 days.
Yes and no. It was the hillier area of my town. Like,
so there was like one hill?
It's right next to, and I say this because this is the name, Detroit Mountain.
I say it because it's the name.
If you looked at that, you'd be like, that's not a mountain.
Is it a molehill?
It's not a molehill either. It's a good sized hill for skiing without having to go like hours away.
That statement does not apply if you live anywhere like west of Denver.
No, if you actually have any mountains or are in an area that is not plains, flatland, farmland, yeah.
If you're
like, that's not a mountain. That's not even close to a mountain. Shut your face.
If your earth has culture and not just flat swamp or wheat, then
they add plenty of culture to the land. It's called manure.
God damn it. The rest of my week, honestly, it's been fine. I've been, just waiting for auditions to roll in, doing a lot of like theater prep stuff for our season. Mm-hmm. Trying to stay sane. For volleyball this week, I felt bad because the team we played against, first of all, it was a 9 o'clock game, which I fucking hate when we have a 9 o'clock game. But the other team was like six people that clearly like had never played volleyball at all before. And after the seventh time you've served overhand I kept, not on purpose, but going at the same person who was the worst one on their team. Mm-hmm. But that's just because they were in the middle. And I'm not good enough to aim. I'm just kind of sending it to the middle of the court so it doesn't go out. I was like, do I switch to underhand or is that more patronizing? So I think at one point I just like purposely sent it into the net. It's like, I don't want it. Like, we're up like 15-3. I've scored 7 points on serves. Jared, I'm just going to give the ball over.
If Survivor has taught you anything, you can't do that.
The stakes of intramural volleyball are not $1 million.
Okay, you're fine.
Anyway, Steven, how's your week?
It's been all right. It's been busy. I'm quote-unquote bulking with a question mark.
Steven's getting gains!
We'll see about that. Just doing more free weights than I have been recently. And boy, the first leg day was on Thursday? No, not Thursday. Wednesday. And I'm still feeling it.
I fucking hate leg day. I mean, there's a reason why people skip it. And then the motto, don't skip leg day.
Don't skip leg day. You can't.
Yeah.
Because for the next like 3 days, I was walking around like, oh man, I feel old.
Remember all those times you'd make fun of me when I was getting in the chair to record? And I'd be like, oh.
Yeah.
That was what I was going through. Yeah.
So give me 2 more weeks for this to settle in, and then I'll be fine. But
that was a lesson I learned from wrestling is like, oh, the first 2 weeks are always the worst. Just like of working out, of getting fit, of trying a new sport, whatever it is. Like if you can, it takes about 2 weeks for your body to acclimate and then it's easier.
Yeah. So that happened. And then also someone hit my car while it was parked.
Oh,
I don't remember if I said this on the podcast. I was pissed about it. It's not bad, but my first quote was like $2,000, and I'm like, ooh, come on, man.
I think you might have mentioned it in passing, or I don't remember.
This is my biggest problem with living in Chicago is depending on where you're at, it's all street parking.
Yep.
And you can't control what's going on. So someone backed into my car, did a lot of damage, got scared and ran away.
Yeah. I've knock on wood right now on this desk, I've never had any issues, or I've had one issue actually, but they left a note, which was nice.
Yeah.
It was, they took off my driver's side mirror. My mirrors don't fold in, which sucks in street parking.
Mm-hmm.
And their note was like, hi, so sorry. I thought I could get past the delivery van that was like on the other side of the road. I didn't quite make it. Here's my number. And they did pay for it, which was nice.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So insurance will cover most of it other than the deductible, but I'm still just, well, now my rates are going to go up, and it's not a particularly worthwhile car to invest in at this point anyway, but I'm not at a point where I want to buy a new car. So we ball.
I have the really cheap insurance that's like just covers other people in case I hit them.
Mm.
So again, knock on wood, really can't have anything happen to my car.
That's bold, Jared.
My car's a piece of shit, man.
You're right.
Can I enchant you with the tale of door rope again?
I know all about door rope. I have been there for door rope and not a fan of door rope, but it works.
It's $400 saved.
If it's dumb and it works, it's not dumb.
That is my motto I live by, and I argue the official motto of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast.
But also, the Survivor 50 premiere was this week, so that was fun. Yeah. Had a good time. Oh,
how was it, vaguely speaking?
I am already excited for this season. Like, okay.
Did Stephanie go home?
I get afraid. I will address no one going home, but I always get afraid with these like returnee seasons that people are going to be a little bit like on the safe side and trying not to ruffle too many feathers, or we know everyone, so I don't want to like piss anyone off. But right out of the gate, we went flying.
And this is the kind of thing that us as fans might not appreciate about casting when you want your favorite person to get in. There's so many things that go into it. They're probably trying to avoid that same outcome. Mm-hmm. They don't want a safe season.
Yeah.
You have to balance out the cast. And if that person they know is going to play like a safe and like easy game, they can't, or not easy, a safe and like risk adverse game, you can't cast 20 of those people or the season is going to suck.
That being said, one of my people on my Survivor Fantasy League was eliminated, but this person was on my bench, so it didn't count against me.
Okay.
It just means I have less people to work with going forward.
Gotcha.
But there's also so many people in this cast, like it was bound to happen at some point.
Sure. I mean, at the end of the day, there'll only be one, so.
Can only be one. But there was a bromance that it went from I hate this person to bromance like immediately.
Okay.
And I saw it coming, but it was still more wholesome than I wanted. Like, it was glorious. I love both of these characters. And so the fact that it went so well in a single episode, amazing.
Now, Kith.
Can I do minor spoiler?
Sure. I mean, I trust you.
Yeah. There was an injury in first episode.
Mm.
And I watched.
Heroes versus villains, you say?
And I watched it happen. And I sitting there diagnosing, like, Steven Couch Doctor. Because I was in a room full of people. And I was like, it's this. And everyone's like, no, there's no way. And then they let the person go on. They let them continue. Let it settle. They come back the next day, do more tests, and they're like, it's this. And I went, redemption!
Did they have to leave the game?
Yes.
Ah, damn.
Yeah. Not fun. Not the outcome anyone wants. Like, injury is never fun.
Especially, like, I don't know who it is. And, like, if it's a person who played more recently, that sucks, but okay. If it's a person that's been waiting for, like, 10 or 15 years to get back on the show, oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, so all in all, I did go and be like, okay, is this person doing better? And all of the social media is like, yeah, we're fine. Still on road recovery, but like better.
Okay. Wow. Damn. This isn't like ACL, Achilles, like something that's long term.
Something tough.
Oof.
Yep.
Wow. Hopefully it's as good as Heroes versus Villains because it started the same way.
You know what else is as good as Heroes versus Villains? Emails! If you want to email us, feel free to do so. SurvivorTBT@gmail.com. Or you can message us on Reddit, u/SurvivorTBT. Go to our subreddit, SurvivorTBT Podcast, where you can chime in all of your thoughts, have arguments back and forth. I don't know. There's lots of stuff going on there. I love it. I love checking in all day, even when I'm not like commenting because I'm doing other stuff. I'm like, nice.
Yeah, it's fun to read. I tend to like, I almost chimed in during the episode discussion, then I went, Jared, the entire episode is an episode discussion for you. You don't need to add more thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. So know that we are watching.
We're reading it. It's fun.
Yeah.
Except for the black bars of text that I'm not allowed to read.
You can't read that.
Nope.
Not allowed. And also you can go on our Patreon, follow us, listen to us, do some bonus episodes, episodes of non-Survivor related content, some video game stuff. It's great. I forgot to post the thing asking for more suggestions. So if you're in the $5 tier and you're like, Steven, where did it go? I didn't post it. It's coming. I swear. Our first email from Dawson. Dawson says, I can never aspire to give as cool facts as the zookeeper that writes in. However, I'm a Bible scholar. And since you touched on my area of expertise a few times last episode, I thought I'd chip in some context.
Yeah, it's incredibly relevant to this season, weirdly enough.
Yeah. What you talked about at the beginning of the last episode is called the search for the historical Jesus. this is already, all right, let's go. The best modern research in this area is done by Dr. Bart Ehrman Ehrman at UNC Chapel Hill. The TLDR of his research is that though a historical analysis of the gospel accounts, both those in Christian canon and the non-canonical gospels, scholars are very certain of the historicity.
I don't know. I made that up.
Yeah, I don't know. Scholars are very certain of the...
You guys have to use small words with us. We're dumb.
Scholars are very certain of the historicity of two things. One, that Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist in the Jordan River. And two, that Jesus was crucified outside Jerusalem under Pontius Pilate. The earliest reference to Jesus / Christians is the non-Jewish world is 110 CE in a letter from Pliny the Younger of the Roman Emperor Trajan, essentially asking how to punish the Christians under his governance.
So it'd be like 70, 80 years later if you go with the idea that Jesus was crucified around or in his like 30s.
Yeah.
Okay.
A side note, if you ever want to read something crazy, look up the non-canonical Infancy Gospel of Thomas.
I've heard of this. I've never read it, but yeah.
And read some of the stories of young Jesus in there. As for Jared saying to Matt, God will not save you from the consequences of your own actions, there's biblical examples on both sides of that. But usually it's meant in a more spiritual / salvation sense. So probably not the best philosophy to apply to the game of Survivor. But it certainly makes for entertaining TV.
I guess I should rephrase that. Prevent the consequences of your actions.
That's all for now. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Dawson.
Yeah, thank you. From Lilith, Redemption Island post-Rice Wars email.
Oh, this is Rice Wars, so we can talk about this.
Yeah, do you want to?
Yeah. This is the episode we're recording right now, so let's do it.
All right. Hi, this is Lilith. I'm writing this before I've listened to you cover anything past the Krista vote, so I may be covering something you've already said. I just watched episode 10, which is that what we're on?
Yeah, that's what we're on right now. Good timing.
And wanted to share a bunch of thoughts before I forgot them. First off, this episode was how I learned what Womp Womp was, even a thing back in, or learned that Womp Womp was even a thing back in 2011. I thought that was a late Gen Z / early Gen Alpha thing.
Really? I feel like it's been with us forever.
When Philip went on his rant, he said something about many black people self-destructing, and it seemed like he was pulling the crime card that a lot of racist politicians use.
I also had that thought of like, wow, like he is the guy who can talk about it like this, but it still comes off as weird.
I don't feel especially comfortable calling a black man racist, especially given I am white myself, but that did make me feel uncomfortable, and I wanted to know what you and maybe some non-white listeners think. On a lighter note, Philip using Zap as a pseudo-slur for the Zapateras in the final 9 tribal council was downright hilarious.
It's pretty funny.
Even stranger is that at the end of this, Philip actually makes a good point when he shares that anecdote about him and his dad in the grocery store.
You were going to talk a lot about that, I think.
Uh-huh. It's like the opposite of a momentary lapse of judgment, a momentary accuracy in judgment.
Sure. Yeah. Philip's constant abuse of the English language is something that has provided many moments of levity this season, from French restaurant to every other thing he mispronounces to, yes, using Zap as a pseudo slur for the other tribe is endlessly entertaining. Yeah, I think maybe we'll probably talk about this in depth throughout the entire episode. As like the biggest thing up front, I would say that like Steven and I are white. Shocker, I know. We're going to do our best. I'm especially interested in hearing from self-identifying people of color, mm-hmm. BIPOC people of like this impression. And in some ways, and I think I'm going to make this parallel throughout the episode in a couple different places. It feels almost cowboy-esque from Cook Islands in that like, oh, you're dealing with some stuff that I am not an expert in, but I have like you're giving me glimpses into it. And I'm really interested to hear where we end up and like what other people have to say about it.
Yeah, like I hinted at in the opening bit that this is a delicate conversation.
It's fraught.
With that, I think Survivor has given us a lot of ammunition to talk about through the first 10 episodes. So We'll get to it. I'm going to hold a lot of the conversation to the actual episode. Yeah. But thank you for all these good questions. Also, continuing on with the email, also Julie stealing Philip's shorts could have become the biggest mistake of her life. If she didn't get voted out that night, that's at least a few days of looking at Philip in his underwear.
I had the same thought. I was like, Julie, why are you doing this to us? Now, yeah. Thankfully, Philip decides to do like a loincloth with the buff and like put that in front of his junk yeah. for the rest of the episode. And I was like, thank you so much. I do not need to see your wang for the rest of your time on Survivor.
He has a shirt though, doesn't he? Why is he choosing not to wear that?
I mean, probably out of spite at that point.
Sure. Now for more general thoughts on the season. Redemption Island is annoying for me as a statistics/trivia nerd because it really muddles placements.
Yeah.
David was voted out in the final 10, but that because of how duels work, he got 12th place. If you want to tell someone who got 10th place in Nicaragua, because I have no life, that's easy. Brenda was voted out in the final 10, but here it's unnecessarily complicated.
Yeah.
Another complaint, there are potential jurors who won't have seen every tribal council. For example, going forward, if Mike or Matt end up on the jury, they won't have seen information that could have been very important in the decision to vote against future contestants.
And one of them won't. Like, at least one of them won't.
This entire, like, blow up in this episode, neither of them saw.
Yep, and at least one of them will end up on the jury. Because I assume at least one of them will end up on the jury. I don't think we're going to bring two people back from Redemption Island. So at least one of them, by process of elimination, would yep. have to go to the jury.
Mm-hmm. Philip is the first example of something that'll be an unfortunate trend for the 20s and 30s. Wish.com casting.
Oh, what does that mean?
Survivor saw the popularity of Coach and wanted to have another Coach.
Oh, shit.
So we got Coach from Wish.com.
I get it now.
To diminishing returns.
Uh-huh.
Philip will not be the last We Have Coach at Home casting choice.
Fuck.
And Coach will not be the only player to receive this treatment.
So I now get why people stand Coach. Because, like, when you compare him to Philip, yeah, he's great.
Finally, the fact that Jeff has been reading every Zapatero vote before any Ometepe vote is interesting to me. The suspense isn't which side has more numbers, it's who do the invincible Ometepes choose to smite today?
Yeah, for this episode in particular, the tension is, will Ashley and maybe Natalie or Andrea go rogue and vote for Philip? Because that's all they need.
Yeah, so a lot of people don't like the season due to not necessarily like unpopular, people get frustrated with the predictability at this stage of the game.
Yeah, that's fair. And this season has also gotten incredibly ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And like from the merge on has become, I would say, unpleasant.
Fair. Got it. Thank you so much for that email. Moving on to Michael C's Redemption Island 6-9 email. Lumping these all together since I was out of the town and just caught up. In hindsight, I kind of wish Jared could be surprised by who makes the cut for Cambodia. Yeah, for second chances.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't remember all of them anyway.
Like, if Steven just told him, yeah, Savage is in contention to return, but left that to fan voting as a surprise. I could have, but we're years past that point, yeah. So here we are. But that would probably be way too hard to keep track of and for emailers to keep secret for the years it would require. That's also why I chose that. But it is unfortunate that someone like Stephanie is known immediately that she never returns. Though she's young enough still that she could return if the show ever decides to recognize the 20 players again.
Yeah, and I don't know. To me, that doesn't, like I just said it earlier in the episode, so many things go into casting that, mm-hmm. like, that doesn't feel like a spoiler to me. That doesn't mean that somebody that took Stephanie's spot is better than Stephanie, necessarily. It just means that either they wanted to forget this season or this stretch, or they thought it would work better in this dynamic. I guess Cambodia's fan casting, but still.
Yeah. But fan casting given a limited casting pool.
Right, yeah, true.
It seems like Jared is slowly starting to notice the warts in the season and why it may be disliked by fans. Namely, the way the early merge is progressing is rather ugly and not very fun to watch. This episode, namely.
Yeah, the shoe dropped and behind it was an anvil. That has also dropped.
Though I do like that the show, recognizing that five straight episodes of pagonging would be boring TV, has taken some steps to expedite it. Even if the results in Redemption Island now having almost as many people there as actually remaining in the game. What?
I think maybe as many like Zapatera members on Redemption Island as are in the game.
I think that's right.
Honestly, can we just put like the five votes into one episode? Can we just run through Zapatera?
Run the table. There's also a major change in the gameplay meta, not twist related, that's happening this season that will impact the next few seasons, that the show will end up addressing in some creative ways.
Is it the tribal aspect, or is it the we're grabbing a goat and dragging them from the very beginning to the very end, rather than somebody that happens to obtain goat status closer to the end?
I'm not going to say, just because I don't want to...
No, that's fair.
I don't want to put a little thing in your eyes to look for.
The only other thing I can think of is the sabotage of their own camp.
It's sabotage.
And that is something I addressed all the way back in Samoa and went, this is going to get out of control. And it's starting to get out of control.
Mm-hmm. Mario Lanza wrote a pretty good analysis of Matt's round trip Redemption Island trip that I'll link to Steven after the season. It was objectively a good move by Rob and the Ometepes, but maybe not the best way to win friends and influence people with the Zapateras.
Absolutely not. Matt just did the fucking like Grandpa Simpson, like comes in, puts his hat in the hook, walks around, grabs the hat, and goes back out.
Nope. Grant, Ashley, Natalie, Andrea, or I'm glad Jared has been giving Grant, Ashley, Natalie, Andrea their flowers and recognizing their agency too. I think all four of them are playing the game and have plans for the future. It's just whether the show highlights that or not. But Philip has definitely outstayed his welcome for me by now, too.
Oh, easily.
I do give him grace for being the only black man, but he's putting on such a persona, it's hard to know where the real Philip lies. And there's some real ugliness ahead, including one of my least favorite episodes, I'm assuming.
Probably this one.
Could be this one. Finally, I would ask your thoughts on the tribal divide this season. I think it's the most stratified we've seen two tribes in a long time. Do you think this is due to no swap, or is it Rob's personality just preventing any intermingling at all?
Yeah, I mean, Rob came in with the strategy or developed it close to the merge of I'm going to rule my tribe with an iron fist. I think that mixed with Zapatera also being closely bonded and having a team mentality. Like, let's not pretend that Zapatera wasn't locked into each other as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Grant, Ashley, and Natalie, and to a lesser extent, Andrea, not having a reason to flip. Like, you have Philip being the lightning rod for all the problems, possibly some of his stink getting on to Boston Rob, and there's no advantage for them to go to the other side. There's no ambiguity where they would be among the Zapateras. The only two people that would have made sense to do that were Matt and Andrea. Mm-hmm. And then Matt was so fucking bad at it that it was no longer an option for Andrea.
Yeah. We know he doesn't want anything happening, but we at least still see Ashley and Grant socializing at times. So what do you think has caused such an old school tribal fault line to develop? Just a question for discussion, but great pod as always.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, pretty much everything. I think I covered all that.
Yeah, bringing Rob in with the old school mentality and not having any sort of tribe switch, not having any sort of intermingling at all, has forced one of the most tribal seasons we've seen in the past 10 years.
And the buddy system.
And the buddy system,
yeah. I mean, it's toxic, and Like, if Boston Rob makes it to Final Tribal, I think we have another All-Stars Final Tribal for him in store.
Mm.
But it's effective because it breeds paranoia and nobody wants to be Matt. Like, he instituted a dictatorship so effectively by, like, Philip is the cause of, like, everyone's ire. You made an example out of Matt twice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to risk getting my head cut off for this.
Don't be like Matt. Don't be like Matt. Don't be like Matt.
I also wonder if Redemption Island is causing it a little bit too, because in order for you to break ranks, well, then you have to go against Boston Rob. And Boston Rob is really fucking good at challenges.
Mm.
So are you going to risk sending him to Redemption Island and then him coming back who knows when? And then all he has to do is win one challenge and make it to the final tribal where he has a better story than if you just let him be a dictator?
Ain't nobody goes against the Don.
He went from mob boss to dictator.
Yeah. And that's all our emails. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for sending in thoughts, as always. I love it. Bracing myself. Bumper.
All right, so this episode came out on 4/20 of 2011.
Boo, 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 boo. Blaze it.
Fucking blaze it. Fabio loved this episode. And a few things did happen in the week between episodes.
How much weed do you think Fabio could buy for $1 million at the time?
A week's worth for that guy. Black Friday for online poker in the U.S. Indictment, United States versus Scheinberg shuts down sites accusing companies of fraud and money laundering.
Go on.
It's always just the same scam again, man. Now we have Polymarket before we had online poker. And there still is online poker, but they get around it by, I think it's now just like fake money or whatever. But
someone was telling me about like how a lot of the online poker scams worked. I don't remember if it was you or if it was someone else that I was in a room with, about how like at the time people would just like all sit at the same virtual table while in the same room and like share their hands so that they could split the money, and whoever was in the opposite seats would just have no chance.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, it wasn't me that told you that. I mean, I can also see how it would work for money laundering, right? Yeah. Like you hold a private room and you just put the money in, and then you make sure that the person who's going to be like the laundering party wins, and now it's clean money because you got it from a poker website.
Yeah, now it's all AI doing the exact same thing. So my God, please don't do online poker rooms. It's not worth your time. It's not worth your money.
Yeah, unless you're, I mean, if you want to do it like for free, like there are ones that are just free for fun. Like
if
whatever.
You're playing for like virtual tokens, so be it.
My mom used to.
You're playing for Neopet tokens. Go for it.
And don't, I mean, I'm not going to tell you to spend your money, whatever, but like don't do Polymarket and shit because like that is all just insider gambling for the most part.
I can't, it's got to come to it. Like someone's got to stop this, right?
Steven, have you looked at the state of our government right
now? I am aware, but like at some point in our lives, someone has to stop it.
Yeah. I mean, right now, listen, we are in a golden era of scams.
Scams and corruption, baby.
It is insane what people are getting away with right now and in ways that are hard to track. And like, I don't know, maybe there'll be accountability at some point, but I'm not holding my breath for the near future.
I feel like this is such an easy thing. Why hasn't Congress clamped down on spam calls and robocalls and like all of these things that are easily like stoppable?
Those ones in particular, I don't know, but a lot of the like corruption stuff is just because like money, man.
Yeah.
There's no money in stopping it. Anyway, that's a whole side tangent.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones premiered.
Hey.
Hey. And it went super well the entire time.
Yeah. Sean Bean's in it.
Yeah.
I love him. I hope he has a long track record in the show. Listen, it's in 8 seasons, right?
By that point of Sean Bean's career, you should have known how it was going to go. Then Thor premiered in Australia. The first Thor, which I didn't realize Game of Thrones was as old as the first Thor. I would have thought it was like at least like Thor 2 or Thor 3. No, wait, no, Thor 3 was years and years later. Thor 2. Or like other Marvel movies around the time of Thor 2 is what I'm trying to say. Anyway.
Thor was a late Marvel, like Avengers Marvel movie.
Yeah, 2011. That's got to be pretty close to Avengers, probably like 2012.
I think so, because it was when I was in college, like early when I was in college, so it's got to be.
The top 5 movies are Hana, Soul Surfer, we're talking at number 3, Hop, and Rio. But the number 1 is, or sorry, the number 3 is Scream 4. It should have been number 4.
Relevant.
I know, yeah. That's part of the reason I picked it, because Scream 7 just came out.
Mm.
Are you familiar with Scream 4, Steven?
I am familiar with the Scream 1.
Ah, it's such a good movie. Scream 4. It has been many years since the ghost-faced killer cut a deadly path through the town of Woodsboro. In order to get over the trauma of those horrific events, Sydney Prescott, Neve Campbell, has written a self-help book. She returns to Woodsboro for her book tour and reconnects with old friends Gail Weathers, Courtney Cox, and Sheriff Dewey, David Arquette. However, Sydney's arrival also sparks the return of Ghostface, putting Sydney and everyone she loves in danger. Steven, what do you think this ran on Rotten Tomatoes?
Are we on a horror movie? Mm-hmm. Are we on an upward trajectory or a downward trajectory for... I feel like four is a good excuse for a downward trajectory, but they still have all the stars, so we'll go with...
No movie with stars has ever been bad.
We'll go with a critic score of 48, an audience score of 56.
Whoa, you are one percentage point off on the audience. 57.
Damn.
The critic is actually higher than the audience. It's 61.
Okay.
But damn, that's good on the audience. You really read that. The consensus being, the franchise is showing its age, but Scream 4 is undeniably an improvement over its predecessor with just enough meta humor and clever kills.
Okay. I have seen just the first Scream.
Same. I want to watch them.
Scream 8 just came out. So
it was 7.
Okay, never mind. Sorry. I don't know.
You could be right.
I could be absolutely wrong. It's usually the case.
No, between the two of us, I'm usually the one that's wrong.
All right, cool.
Anyway, that's it.
Let's get into the episode. Episode 10, Rice Wars.
I just knew Philip was going to do some shit because that was really what the last time on focused on.
Yeah.
Was Philip's arc, if that's what you want to call it. I do want to say, though, in that, like, in the context of this episode with the last time on, they really focused on him being on the bottom of, like, oh, they tried to, Zapateras tried to, like, beat up on the guy on the bottom, Philip. And I'm like, I don't actually think Philip's on the bottom. Maybe by the end of this episode he is. But at the start of the episode, he's kind of anywhere, to be honest, because Boston, like, he sticks around or at least it seems like he'll stick around for as long as Boston Rob wants him to stick around. And Boston Rob has said everything from, oh my God, I have to get rid of him the next time we can, to I'm taking him to the final three.
It's hard not to be reactive to this man.
Yes. And he, like, Boston Rob has been reactive in his words, but not in his actions.
Yes.
Which is interesting.
It depends on what you mean by the bottom. Because, like, yes, the five could, like, band together and say, he's done, he's next. But then what move forward do you go for the rest of them? Like,
yeah,
you could splinter off into factions. You could go pick.
I mean, Andrea's on the bottom.
Okay.
Like, that feels like, I mean, so Philip is not in a hierarchy of, like, who's going next. Philip's place moves based on Philip's behavior in the amount of time between votes.
Got it.
And I guess some others, like, he got bumped up into top three for a little bit by Boston Rob because of Ashley.
Because of his impressive performance in Stealth R Us.
No, because Ashley's poor performance in the conversation with Ralph. But this episode, Boston Rob's he's telling us that he's considering getting rid of him. And I think that calculation for Boston Rob is, will he, if I take him to the end, am I going to be associated with him? It's the Russell stink that Parvati had to deal with.
Sure.
Interesting.
Interesting conversation. All right. We start with Matt.
Oh, man. I feel so bad for this dude.
Lord, I want to be out of this game. I want nothing to do with it. But if you want me to stay, I'm going to stay. I'm going to fight. And I want to show everyone your glory.
And then Jeff's in the bush going, Matt, it is I, God.
God?
You cannot quit this game.
Oh, okay. For your glory, right?
Yes. Yes, for my glory, for God's... No, I'm God. For God, my glory, yes.
So then David shows up. Murphy. David Murphy.
David's such a weird guy.
He's a weird guy. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, okay, so I'm just gonna do this now. I forgot last episode to pick a new winner because David was my winner pick from episode one.
Sure.
So I need to pick a new winner.
Sure, you didn't want to wait till he's gone?
I just don't want to forget again, all right, to be honest.
Go on, what'd you got?
I feel like the person most likely to win is Natalie, and yet that would be the worst person to win from an editing perspective.
Okay.
Because we've seen, like, so little of her.
Sure.
I don't think Boston Rob can win this jury. I don't think the Zapateras are going to make it that far. So, I mean, unless Redemption Island. So, I don't think Ashley has a great shot, to be honest. She could go home next episode. I'm going to say Andrea.
Okay.
I think she's the most palatable of the Ometepes to the Zapateras.
I do want to mention the fact that you just said she's at the bottom.
Yep.
Okay. As long as you know that.
So have
multiple people Ben.
Okay.
And managed to sneak by.
Got it. All right. Lock it in.
Lock it in, and I'll change it next episode when she's voted out.
So they're all confused because now there's three people. We've never had three people at Redemption Island before. Does this mean, is it three-person duels or...
a truel, as they call it?
Yeah. Can you have a three-person duel? A trial. A truel.
I don't know why they're so confused by this. It seems pretty straightforward to me. The only question I had was, is only one of them staying or are two of them staying?
Mm-hmm. That's their question, too. Is this the last duel? Do we just pile up a bunch of people on Redemption Island and then have them all do a final duel?
I think that survivors learned all the wrong lessons in some ways of surprises. They think that it's like good if you keep contestants in the dark because they don't want people to solve the game, right? Uh-huh. That's the thing that they're desperately trying to avoid, despite the fact that Survivor is not a solvable game. Because the jury changes it every single time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, well, we're going to keep them in the dark to get these moments. But it actually just kind of freezes people. You can't make decisions without information. And if too many things are open questions, it's going to restrict the moves that people want to make. That could be another reason why this season is so fucking tribal. Mm. I don't care about the merged tribe name. It doesn't exist. We're back to Thailand of two tribes living on the same beach, but they are not merged.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. David basically repeats what you just said. We don't know what's going to happen. And right now we're the Zapatera rejects.
It's pretty funny.
And Matt.
Matt rejected Zapatera.
It's fair. We go back to camp for a little bit. Steve says, oh, well, it sucks, but I'm glad it wasn't me. We didn't have much to say in that tribal council because most of it was occupied by Philip.
Cut to Philip sitting in a chair, mumbling to himself.
Uh-huh. Supposedly in Cherokee, and I don't know any Cherokee, so I don't know.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, I didn't have like subtitles or anything on, so I just thought I couldn't understand what he was saying because he was speaking at such a low volume. Okay,
I cannot verify whether he's actually doing that or if he's just mumbling gibberish. The subtitle did say mumbling Cherokee gibberish.
Hilarious.
So it could be both.
Could be both. I speak English and I can mumble English gibberish.
Steve says, I'm not even sure Philip is a good guy at heart. Like, he's doing his thing, he's surviving, and I take my hat off to him. But our only hope at this point is that his tribe gets so irritated with him that he's got to go.
And that does seem to have been their strategy this episode. And I think it was probably their best strategy.
Yeah.
I think it kind of backfired. Like, once we get to tribal a little bit. But I think it, like, if I was in Zapatera's place, I would be trying to do the exact same thing. Because you guys want to have a lightning rod? Great. Let's have a lightning bolt that's so big that this guy just needs to be gone.
So we then show Philip meditating on a rock, and he goes into a little of his background, and I use quotes around background. I don't know.
Because what's true?
What's true? What's this, being put on?
It's edging into the coach territory of like, sure, man. Yeah, you totally had a military helicopter that took you into the Amazon. Like, sure, dude.
When I got into Buddhism, they teach you that your spirit is interconnected into all living things, including God. He uses various names for God across all religions. And it manifests itself in a number of ways. And you have to be willing to accept it and channel that. His next premonition, through his grandfather, is about his relationship with Rob and that he's on the right path. And this circle of trust is where he needs to be. And I will be here at the end of this game.
The worst guy you know always has discovered Buddhism at some point in their life.
Why? Okay, hold on. Why do you say this?
You went to college.
I did go to college.
You didn't have that guy that was like, oh yeah, man, I touch the trees and I feel connected to my sister who's 500 miles away. And I know, like, and it's just like, dude, you've done too many psychedelics. Chill the fuck out. And I'm not, like, do not hear what I'm not saying. This is not a critique of Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
This is a critique of that guy that finds it and goes, yeah, man.
There is an archetype in a lot of like sitcoms of a woman in her 40s who finds Buddhism and then just becomes right obnoxious and annoying and has to like preach upon everyone. And again, I go back to what our conversation was talking about Matt earlier in the season. I want people to have something to believe in. I want people to feel spiritualism. I also don't need for me to feel your spiritualism.
Well, I also just like don't believe him. Like, I don't know what his personal spiritual beliefs are, but it's just, it feels like a character. Even if this is what he believes, the way that he's giving it to us and presenting it to us feels like a song and dance of like, I found this feather and now I've created
two feathers.
And now I've created this new character I'm going to play. Like pre-merge and pre-finding the feathers, he was Special Agent Philip Morris, right? Is that his last name?
I don't remember what his
last name is. That might be a cigarette brand. Special Agent Philip. Now he is spiritual quarter Native American Buddhist Philip. And like all of those things can be true, but the way that he's like, he's wearing it like it's a costume to
Shepherd us. Shepherd is his last name.
Shepherd. Thank you. Yeah. No, Philip Morris is definitely a cigarette brand. My bad. I'm not good with names. It's annoying. And I really, man, he should have just been voted out like episode 3. And then he could have been a funny memory instead of like, now it's like every time he's on screen, it's like either preachy or ugly.
I'm jumping ahead here, but how do you think his life changes after Survivor?
It's so unknowable because like we got to see Coach twice. Tokenshin's coach, I did not like, at least not a lot of the time. Heroes versus Villains coach, I genuinely liked because he saw that he was like, wow, I didn't like that guy I was being on camera, that character I came in knowing I was going to play. And I reflected on it and I actually like, I became a, like I grew from it. Philip has not shown us that there's any capability for him to do that. He hasn't shown that there isn't, to be fair, but also like coach wasn't threatening people with physical violence. And there's just a level of like, the range of how Philip's life could go after this game is like a motivational speaker that turned his life around to like locked in a mental institution. Like it's such a wide gap just depending on who this guy actually is and where the character stops.
Are you calling him crazy?
Yes. Like
that's what the whole episode's about, Jared.
Let me rephrase that. He is acting crazy.
Okay.
Whether or not that's true to him, or whether or not it's a show, or whether or not it's just he's, what, 60 years old, and it, like old wounds are getting touched on in ways that he like didn't expect out here. I don't know. But like it's bizarre and hard to watch sometimes.
Okay. So as we've seen thus far in this merge season, they have separate living arrangements. They have separate...
They might as well have separate camps.
They may as well have separate camps. Like, they're doing everything by themselves, and we're establishing here that there's a separate food arrangement. They cook their own fools. They cook their own foods.
They also cook their own fools. At least, you know, Boston Rob does when he cooks Matt back to Redemption Island.
Mr. T, he pities those fools.
Right.
Yep. And they, because of how the season has gone, more Zapateras have been voted out, thus leading to a food surplus that Julie is now celebrating a little bit. Hey, you know what? Our food situation is great. We have lots of rice. We can eat basically our fill at this point. So we're doing that now. We see the light at the end of the tunnel, and we may as well eat our fill. And Philip sees this, and he is not too pleased. He watches Julie eat 7.5 scoops of rice. And back at our camp, we would only have 2 each. So that doesn't seem fair.
Too fucking bad. You guys, and I know it's like mostly Boston Rob's decision. And it's actually funny because like the whole confrontation of this episode is between Steve and Philip. But like really, like Boston Rob's the reason for it. you guys decided to not have a singular camp. You guys decided to, frankly, like, psychologically manipulate and kind of, like, torment Zapatera. As I mentioned in the Merge episode, or the maybe it was just last episode, like, this has become the Stanford prison experiment. Like, Ometepe are the guards, and Zapatera are the prisoners, and you guys have treated them like shit every single moment that we have seen since the Merge. And now you're mad at them for, like, not even doing anything to you, just keeping to themselves.
Yeah, they're trying to use up all their rice before they go.
Yeah, of course they are.
And Philip says, well, fact of the matter, all of that rice belongs to us. And I go, oh, that's a jump in logic. Tell me why you think that.
Because they have the power. And it's really, it's really ugly. And this is the dynamic that you created. You are the ones in power. You are the ones that are voting them out one at a time. That is the power dynamic of this game right now. You guys have taken that power and abused it. You won a lot of rewards. You built out a better shelter for yourself. You made them sleep in the fucking cold without the tarp for the whole first night, intentionally. And they're, of course, not going to come to the table and go, here's all of our rice. We saved some for you. Like, go fuck yourselves.
Yeah, it seems, it seems like he wants the best of both worlds in this situation.
Yeah.
Of, I want separate camps. I want separate everything. We want our stuff. But when it comes to food, because you have more, we want to share that.
Well, it feels like they want to reap the benefits of having a of being merged.
When it benefits them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it really undercuts basically any sympathy I would have for Philip or any of the Ometepes. And the rest of the Ometepes kind of know this. Like, they don't...
Oh, they're laughing at this. They're like, what? Rob says Philip's the rice police now, I guess.
Yeah, like, they understand that these are the consequences of their actions, that, like, they're going to have less rice because that is the dynamic they've set up in camp, but Philip cannot accept that.
Okay. So, that's just setting up what happens later. We then go watch our Truul of the episode.
Yeah.
And, oh, hey, it's the card game that Jared wanted. He asked for it.
It's true.
Ask and ye shall receive.
Oh, I you missed one little... this is just a funny, like, I'm going to pick on Philip for one little moment here.
Go on.
He said he's going to watch them like a lion. My brother in Christ, you have hawk feathers on your head right now. Watch like a hawk is a saying. I know about the tattoos.
He's got them tattoos.
But watch them like a lion is not a saying, and you have hawk feathers on your forehead. Anyway, to the Truul.
To the Truul. So, like we said, it's Matt versus David versus Mike, and they're all competing at the same time, and two people will be surviving and moving on to another Truul.
Yeah. Are we just doing Truuls from here on out?
Who's to say? Is that what you think is going to happen?
Dude, I don't know. I don't think they know, to be honest. I'm done guessing.
So we've seen this challenge before. They get 150 wooden tiles, and they have to build a house of cards. First to reach 8 feet, we'll move on and survive another day. And the only rule, and Jeff points this out, no stacking them flat.
Does that mean you can't stack any two of them flat? Or is it like you can't... Because I guess it would have to be that, huh?
I think so, and I think it's important just for
Mike,
the Mike situation here, where he could have just been like, all right, boop, boop, boop.
Okay, I will die on this hill. Mike got it the first time.
I thought so, too.
He had his hands off of it. It was over 8 feet. They should have been called right there.
I don't remember if it was in past iterations. In future iterations of this challenge, you have to have it hold for a count of three.
That makes sense.
So I don't know why we just skipped that part of it.
This could be the reason why they institute in the future, because it could also be like the angle, like if Jeff can't see straight on and thinks Mike's hands are still on it or something.
Uh-huh.
It didn't end up mattering because Mike then just like redoes it and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, what do you mean? He did it. It's right there. He's done.
Yeah. Mike, he gets out to an early lead. He hits that 8 foot mark and it's wobbly and he only has one card. So he's like trying to stack this on. But when he lets go, he knows that that whole thing is shifting. So he's like trying to find the exact point that it can sit and be in place as a solo card to get over that 8 foot mark versus trying to go back down your stairs and grab something else. You could lose everything.
Yeah.
And he sways for a long time, but okay, he holds it. He gets it. He's in. Thus, a Matt versus David.
And Matt just praying for a gust of wind to knock it over so he can be fucking done.
Send me a sign.
God, please.
But he does beat David. He outpaces him the entire way. And he wins it. David is our first member of the jury.
Okay.
How do you feel like David does in Future Survivor?
I really like David. I don't think he does that well. I think that he has a hard time holding his tongue, especially at Tribal. And that's not going to get you voted out at that Tribal necessarily, but it hurts you the next day. And once somebody is under David's skin, David can't let it go. And that is not a good thing to have in Survivor. It makes you like Philip. It makes you a target. It makes you a lightning rod for the tribe. So, like, I think he's honestly probably a pre-merge vote most of the time, even though I really like him.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting character. I think Sarita kind of hit at something that, although he didn't want to hear, was probably accurate. When stress hits him, he becomes really hard to be around.
He cracks under pressure.
He does crack under pressure.
And he can't turn off the lawyer.
He can't turn off the lawyer. Always playing lawyer game.
I think for most of the season, he's been technically correct, and that doesn't mean shit.
Jeff confirmed that he had the highest IQ of any Survivor contestant at 144.
Wow, okay. I mean, he's incredibly smart.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming he doesn't come back.
He does not come back. Okay. Yeah, this is his one and only shot. I have some more information, but it is not relevant yet. I think the final pin on the David story is soon to come.
What do you mean?
Sometime between now and the end of the season, we're going to talk about more David.
I understand. What I was asking was, is it relevant through the rest of the season or relevant in 2026? But season. Okay.
Yeah. He says that he lost 15 to 20 pounds during Redemption Island. That's damn crazy. Yeah.
That's like losing almost a pound a day.
And I'm going to save that for when we get to that.
Okay.
Like I said, it will become relevant in the near future.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. Back to the episode as we step back in. Rob is a little frustrated here. We keep sending people to beat Matt and they're failing. If he comes back...
Boston Rob's going to get home and look for Matt under his bed.
If he comes back and he beats me, it's over. Yeah. Like,
if Matt is sitting next to Boston Rob at Final Tribal, it's done.
It's over.
I honestly, like, if Matt wins this fucking game, I'm going to be so impressed. It's not the way you should win Survivor, but, like, holy shit, dude.
He is paying a physical and a psychological toll.
Yeah.
Like, every day in this game.
Do you think Survivor wants him to win or is terrified of him winning at this point? Like, I remember, like, we talked about Cook Islands and, like, when we got to the White Power Alliance, the producers were like, oh, fuck, what are we going to do? Do you think there's a level with Matt where they're like, oh, this is a great story? Or do you think they're like, oh, no?
I think they kind of want all or nothing at this point. Either, like, he finds a way to get through and, like, makes it, he has a great story, or he is done as quickly as possible because his shtick is getting old.
God, his story would be like, that story, if he did go on and win, would be so much better if he made it like 3 votes. Like, if he just made it like 3 votes between going to Redemption Island and back.
Yeah, I get it. He says God continues to give him strength and he wants to take Rob out is what he says. Like, that's his stated purpose here.
I don't care if I win. I want you to lose.
And I also found it really fun, like, watching the cards collapse in the montage. I think it was just some fun symbolism of whatever that could mean. So then we get back to camp. Here it comes. They're singing their song. They're having a good time. We're going to eat ourselves out of house and home. Rice wars.
And that's Boston Robin Grant.
Correct.
Having fun with it.
Having some fun.
And
is where it starts.
Yeah. Does Philip steal the rice before the challenge or now? I can't remember. At some point, Philip goes to Zapatero's rice and steals some. I think it's before the challenge.
I believe it is before the challenge.
Like, that's fucked up, man.
It is fucked up. But he thinks that he's entitled to that.
Yeah, that's part
of... That's not your food, that's our food.
Philip's inability to see past the 3 inches directly in front of his face is part of the problem. That, like, he thinks he's entitled to everything in this case.
So, Andrea, in searching through the ometepe rice, finds maggots in the rice, which is not something that you want to see. We have seen this before. Your rice gets moisture in it, you're screwed.
Fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
They said that there was some type of, like, defect in the metal container mm-hmm. at the bottom, that it, like, cracked open or rusted or I don't know what.
Yep. So, they... Philip then says, all right, let's lay it all out on a blanket and let's pick out the bad stuff. And
survivors just put it in plastic. I mean, they have before.
I'm pretty sure they do.
Well, not this time.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Maybe they chose to take it out of plastic and put it in there.
Maybe.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Or
just very preventable.
Very preventable, yes. So Philip then goes, okay, well, we can't leave all this rice out on this here blanket. Do you think we could get them to combine our rice pots? All right, let's go up to them right now. Let's say, hey, we want to combine the rice pots. And Steve says, well, no, I don't think so. I don't want it, and Ralph's not here. So, I want to ask him. Two, I don't think he's going to go for it either. Because that's our food.
Yeah, and Julie's in agreement with Steve anyway.
Yeah. And Philip just gets so upset, like, so fast.
And the thing that neither of them directly address is that, like, the whole crux of the misunderstanding or this argument or whatever is that Philip thinks all of the rice belongs to, frankly, to Ometepe.
Yeah. Not even, like, a shared situation.
No.
We have dominated you. This is our rice now.
Yeah, correct. And Zapatera is like, no, you guys wanted completely separate camps. Great. This is our rice. Mm-hmm. Do whatever you want with your own.
I think whatever you have established as the norm should be the way that it goes.
And neither of them directly address that, which probably would have helped clear some of this up. Like, even at Tribal, they don't directly address that fact, which right. I think probably would have made this a little less charged, uh-huh. or at least if you're on Steve's side, would have gotten more people on your side. But I'm not going to blame anybody for, like, not being able to handle Philip when he flies off the handle like this.
Yeah. And Philip says, wow, it's a real eye-opener to see how individuals behave the way that they're currently behaving, even in a game.
How does that medicine taste, Philip? Because you're the one that manufactured it.
But here, look, you're not thinking about this logically, Jared. Jared specifically. It's not a Zapatera decision. It's our rice, is what he says.
Uh-huh.
And this is, it's such a line, because once the tribes merge, only the rewards are split.
So why do you have separate shelters?
That is exactly where my brain was going next.
Like, what? Like, I think they have separate campfires. I don't know that for sure, but I've never seen an Ometepe person sit in one of the chairs. When Zapatera sit in one of the Ometepe chairs.
And
like, we have a confessional of Boston Rob, and I know that, like, the contestants don't know this, but as something for us to talk about, of Boston Rob saying, I want these camps split.
Yeah.
I want us to share nothing.
And Philip's getting up in arms about the, well, we it's all out on this blanket. If we leave it here, it's just going to get bad, and we can't put it back in our thing because it will get bad there too. And Steve goes, well, you should have thought of that before you dumped it all out. So,
or he says you should have asked us before you dumped it all out.
Yeah, like, we could have had a conversation, but you just did.
Because the Ometepes treat Zapateras badly and then expect them just to take it.
And Philip, not getting what he wants, gets real pissy real fast, saying, the first opportunity that I can, I'm going to take your rice and I'm going to hide it.
Yeah. Hey, remember when I said a couple of seasons ago that Survivor needs to have rules around this stuff?
Uh-huh.
Now, I know that, like, rice isn't a personal belonging, and obviously, like, Nyanka stole the food last season, but this, like, boy, this just, it's getting so close to being such a big problem.
Yep. And again, I'm gonna talk through this conversation here using the language that they use, and we're gonna have a discussion about it.
Uh-huh.
It's gonna be a very nuanced discussion because it has to be.
Yeah, and I want to say actually at the front of it before you even do that.
Go on.
We only have to go off of what the show has given us.
Correct.
I have no background information on Philip's dynamic with the tribes, or like that with stuff we haven't seen. I have no, like, we've never seen Steve and Philip even have like a conversation before this scene. So if there are other, we are going with the information that we have. If there are other like microaggressions or shit that Steve has said or done like previous to this, then like my opinion is open to changing.
Yes. All right. So Philip has threatened to steal the rice and just hide it. And
effectively trying to starve the other tribe.
Yeah. And Philip says, you better take that can everywhere. I'm a reasonable man. And Steve goes,
citation needed.
You're a lunatic. Like, you are a lunatic. And Philip responds with, I know I am. And never forget that. So Philip is acknowledging the calls of crazy. And then, I just want to say that at the front.
Yeah, and then, if I remember correctly, threatens Steve with physical violence right after that, saying that he knows different types of judo and that he will just react.
Yeah, I'm a Wang Chung Kung Fu expert.
I don't even know if that's a real form of martial art. It very well could be. But that, so like, that's a hardly even veiled threat to injure Steve.
Uh-huh.
To physically fight him.
Sometime in before that, Steve says, you're a dangerous man, Philip. I think on the, like, I'm trying to get out of this conversation, let me say something that is, like, vaguely insulting. Vaguely, like, just a sentence.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Steve, I'm feeling very uncomfortable, to be honest, even at this point, of like, hey, dude with a nondescript federal agent maybe background has just threatened to commit violence upon me. Okay, I'm gonna say something to try to lower the temperature.
And as I have mentioned before, after he acknowledged and said, yeah, I am a lunatic, we then pivot to every time someone of my color gets up in your face, I am a lunatic. And then we go, oh no. And Grant over in the corner to Boss and Rob, he just brought up the race card? What? Everyone is stunned because now we have pivoted to all right, this is a conversation about rice, to this is a conversation about race.
Phil changed one letter and it made a lot of a difference.
Very important. So everyone just kind of lets him do his thing here. Like, it's him and Steve, and everyone else is just there. Eventually, Ralph gets involved because he shows up.
But the Ometepes get involved too, actually, on a certain extent. Like I think Ashley and Andrea, it's not like a conversation, but like, if I remember correctly, I hear them in the background being like, telling Philip to calm down. Like, they, even the Ometepes are like, okay, let's take a step back.
Uh-huh.
And also, like, I know I'm harping on a lot, but the two rules of Survivor are you can't commit physical violence and you can't promise to split the money. What about threatening to commit violence? And I know that that's like, that's a tricky, but like, what if Philip had just said, you better watch out because I have a machete here? Like, where is the point at which that rule is broken? Is it not until the act itself happens?
I do believe that it is the act that does it. However, if someone were to threaten like that, I would hope to God that producers would step in.
Yeah, I don't have faith in the show to do that in 2011.
I also don't. So that's why I say I hope that they would. So it kind of settles down for a little bit. Grant says it's like watching divorce court. So this is just like, all right, we have bad feels and everyone can feel the bad feels.
Yeah.
We're all just watching. And it calms down for a moment.
And I will say, too, that, like, in my notes, before this scene, before the challenge, I have my notes, Philip, you're acting like a crazy person. Like, I have that written down verbatim.
And then it sparks back up of Philip going, you know, every time I make it, like, they've kind of gone their separate ways. They're still within earshot, clearly. Every time I make an argument, I'm crazy. that's what happens to some white folks. And Steve's just like, he points like, your words, not mine. I'm not touching this.
Yeah.
And then he says the thing, that N-word is crazy.
Yeah.
And everyone goes, whoa, 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 whoa. No one said that. No one is, you're putting the words in the mouth. And then he goes on, you don't know me. I've never been arrested. I've never even been detained.
Nobody accused you of that. Like, part of this is that Philip is shadowboxing with, like, a history of, like, assumptions made about him throughout his entire life that I don't think anybody is making.
Yes. So this is kind of where the conversation goes for us, is there's a lot of history here, yeah. Clearly. Like, he has gone through some stuff, and he talks about it in Tribal Council. But it does feel like we're jumping to some conclusions here.
Yeah, so, like, again, we are open to hearing feedback. I've said it before this ever came up, like, you brought up something of, like, and I think maybe some listeners have written into of, like, oh, well, you know, Philip being the only black contestant out there at this point in the game. Mind you, he did target and vote off the other black contestant on his tribe.
That is true.
But this, Philip's problems, at least, like, as far as I can tell in the game of Survivor, have not had anything to do with his race. There's always implicit bias,
right?
But it feels like, again, that shadow boxing. And I've said in the beginning of the episode, it reminds me a lot of Cowboy from Cook Islands, because Cowboy was shadow boxing against the other Asian members of his tribe because of experiences he had had with being a Vietnamese refugee and his interactions in the Asian community.
And how he chose to address it. Like, he would make jokes so that it would diffuse the situation. But other people in that same situation are like, that makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, he would make, like, racist jokes.
Yeah.
And this just feels eerily similar of, like, what you are dealing with, Philip, is not actually what's happening in front of your face. Actually, if anything, Cowboy's situation was a little bit more that, because he didn't fit in because he was older and because he was, like, all these other things about him. But Philip is, you've been being authoritarian and dickish to everyone longer than the Zapateras have been in your camp, uh-huh, or that you've shared a camp together. Like, you were like this to the Ometepes as well. Mm-hmm. There just wasn't a division of camps.
Yes. And again, we have to play the balance here, as Jeff does in Tribal Council.
Jeff, I'm jumping ahead, but Jeff handles that Tribal Council really fucking well.
He does. Philip is and has been playing this game since day three, as a solo black person. Like, mm-hmm, he is the only one, and is clearly on the outs, or just, like, doesn't fit in with his people.
Yeah.
So, in a prolonged experience where you always feel like you're not a part of this group, and he kind of comes and goes in this situation of, do I fit in, do I not fit in?
He's in a toxic situationship with Boston Rob.
I'm sure that makes you feel a little on edge and a little doubting. And this is all building up inside of him until he's self-fulfilling prophecy of, like, these people hate me and this is why.
And rather than it being they hate me, or if they do hate me, it's because of the way I talk to the women, or the way I treat the people around me, or that we've ostracized the entire Zapateras and now they stood up to us one time, and, you know, maybe that's the result of how we've treated them. He jumps to something else that has been true at points in his life. Like, the story, like, I cannot imagine the experience. And I think this is, again, where the Cowboy comparison goes in, of, like, Cowboy has, like, some fucking trauma, because at least I have to imagine, like, being a refugee from the Vietnam War, mm-hmm, like, that's a tough start to your life.
Yeah.
And Philip talks about being a young black boy in like, upstate New York, and his dad being talked down to. And that is, like, one experience that stuck with him. I'm sure he has a 1,000 of those stories he could tell.
Interesting choice of word to say, boy, when that was explicitly what the story was
about.
But
he said he was a child at the time.
Yes, child.
Yeah, it was his dad that was called a boy that was demeaning.
Yeah. Either way, being...
I see what you mean. Yeah, my bad. And the, like, a 1,000 of those stories. And, like, that is fucking horrible. And it is a reminder that, like, we're not actually that, like, far past talking, like... time-wise, like the civil rights era.
Oh, we're far too close to Martin Luther King.
Right, like that's a generation ago.
Yeah.
Hardly. Or I guess maybe generations are only 20 years, but I mean like people are still alive.
Those children through it. Who like refuse to go to school with black children.
They vote.
They're alive today. They are choosing to reprise this. Maybe there was always a through line.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And also, and like all of that pain that Philip is probably feeling is real.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I just have a really hard time putting any of that on Steve.
I think it's misguided in this situation.
Yeah. And I like Philip's actions have been shit.
Mm-hmm.
He's treated people like shit. And to be fair, his own tribe has treated him like shit.
Yep.
It's a mutual hatred. I mean, he has, to his, I guess, credit, or like for like color of the context, like to fill that in, like he is, it is hard to be around Ashley and Natalie, I imagine, if you're Philip. Like, you have nothing in common.
Mm-hmm. Clearly.
Clearly. Like, they don't treat you well. You don't treat them well. You're fighting for your life in the game every single day, but you've not handled it well.
Yeah.
And you're taking it out on the Zapateras, and then they stand up to you and you pull this card that comes from a place of reality, that comes from a place of truth in your own life, but is misguided by the circumstances.
Yeah.
That's my read on it.
Yeah. I'm going to move on so that we can actually finish the episode at some point today.
Yeah.
But it's an open discussion. I think, again, as we said in the email section, send in your thoughts, especially people of color. Like,
we are white.
I am very white.
We're very white. We do our best. I hope, again, that Steve and I try not to like run away from these things just because we're white when they come up on the screen or like, you know, talking about bias and stuff like that. I would hope that like our history, like I think sometimes I have gone like defended people for too long. Like I was defending Nyanka for a long time.
Uh-huh.
The last thing I want to say about it is that like Survivor casting. So if you're going to cast a majority white people or like not cast, I guess like, you know, Nicaragua was fairly diverse, but only like a couple black identifying people of color. And then you're going to pick people that have the personalities, the individual personalities of Philip and Nyanka, that's not really setting them up for success.
No.
If you're going to make them the, if you're going to tokenize them, frankly, and be like, okay, we have one or
we
maybe
did
two.
It. We found one.
Right. Yeah. And then you're going to pick people that like, I'm sure their personalities that came out on camera shine through in auditions. There's no way these people that like the way Nyanka and Philip behaved and Philip continues to behave is a complete surprise.
Yeah.
And like, if that's what you're picking as one or like, or as half or your only BIPOC cast member, you are putting them and that entire community in a really bad light.
Yeah.
Because they're like an individual person that is like, is going to act how they're going to act. There's no other framework on that season for like any other behavior.
And as we've discussed before, there's also a reward system built into Survivor. Like producers clearly like when you give these fun, goofy testimonies in your
right
while they're sitting with you. You're gonna get more of those if you continue to act that way.
Yeah, true.
You're gonna get more screen time if you continue to do certain things. Anyway, we have to move on.
I'm just saying this could be not as much of a problem if you had more diversity in the cast to begin with.
Yep. Rob says once all of the Zapatera are gone, the old Philip is going to be back, and wow, boy, went from our stupid, dumb song to that full-on fight.
Yeah, I mean, I would be legitimately afraid of him at this point.
public, Philip is public enemy number one. Right now, I need to find a public enemy number two.
And Julie decides to make herself that.
Yeah. We go to Immunity, and we have to build a puzzle wheel. You have to, like, unspin, like, Dizzy Bat levels of just spin on a thing.
So ridiculous.
And then solve a puzzle wheel. And then the top six people will then move on to a second puzzle wheel.
This challenge sucks. That's a six-piece toddler puzzle. What are we doing here?
Is it better that they cut at six, or should they have just, like, let them keep going?
They should have just taken this one back to the drawing board and tried again. I don't think there's, like, either way it sucks.
Okay. The first person, Rob, Julie, Ralph, Andrea, Steve, and Grant are through the first section. And then we do the second section where Rob is literally hammering pieces in to the point that Jeff's like, whoa, chill.
He says, easy, brother.
Yeah. Don't break my puzzle.
Jeff's earnest reactions to only Boston Rob will never cease to be funny to me. He wants to be one with the boys with Boston Rob so badly.
What happens if someone breaks a puzzle, Jared?
I don't know. I guess you just kind of, like, sucks to suck. I mean, I guess you can still, like, fit all the pieces in, so maybe that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, this...
Jack even says, and maybe he says it every time, and they just showed it this time because Boston Rob tries to hammer fist it in, but he goes, you won't have to force the pieces in. They'll just slide in.
Oh, I promise you, we have tested this.
Puzzle genius Boston Rob trying to pummel it into submission.
Yeah, and Rob, despite his hammering, he wins this challenge, barely beats Steve. Like, Steve...
He was, like, a second behind.
Yeah. So, they have their pick of the litter once again. Back at camp, they're eating their rice again because, God, we love an instigation. Julie says, hey, this is an easy vote for us because we don't really have a choice in the matter.
On a gameplay level, Philip making this about race might have actually saved him because it does make it harder if you're Andrea, Natalie, and Ashley to vote him out this episode. It's something that you're like, wow, I don't, especially because it kind of comes out of nowhere and... You know, the period of time is very short from that to tribal. Like, do you really want to die on that hill? Probably not. But the Zapateras only need two people to flip over.
Correct.
And it wouldn't even need to be like a come over here and be in our alliance. It is literally like, can we borrow your vote for one vote to just put Philip on Redemption Island? I'm surprised Julie, who was all sad for Matt going back, wanted to subject him to that. But oh, well.
So, yeah, we're really hoping that someone's going to join us in voting out Philip. She then chooses to hide his underwear.
It is a choice.
It is a choice.
And...
especially after the conversation we just had.
Yeah. I understand it to a... Like, I think there's a strategic element to it.
Yes.
Of, like, let's do this so that he fucking continues to melt down so that two people will just go, all right, let's just get this over with. It is also the thing I hated that Russell did, although way more effective than Russell ever was with it, funny enough.
Oh, clearly.
But it's a gray area that I don't... It's a weird gray area in the rules.
Yeah. So Philip, after returning, because it was on the line, Philip goes back. He's like, they took my underwear. I know who took my underwear. I'm going to go confront him. That's okay. It could get real fun and exciting here. I can play that game. If my shorts don't come up tonight, there's going to be issues. And Steve says, I feel threatened. Here is where Steve could have done nothing, but Steve kind of like plays into this, like
you're trying to egg him on.
You're a threatening man. And he does it in tribal too, where I'm like, you're not doing yourself any favors.
Yeah.
If you're looking at it from a public perspective, like you were in the right.
Yep.
Or at least you were, from our eye, from what Survivor showed us, people were going to root for you.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of trying to rub dirt in it.
He's playing to an audience of three, though. He's playing to Andrea, Natalie, and Ashley.
Correct. And Philip says, this isn't the NFL. There's no referees to save you here.
There's no rules.
There's no rules.
Hey, yeah, there are, actually. There are rules. There's two of them. I said them earlier. And one of them you have threatened to break like four different times.
Yep. And then Rob caps off with, it doesn't matter who we target tonight. One man shouldn't have this much power on an island, referring to himself.
I agree.
I'm glad that I do. Anything else before tribal?
It was from the previous conversation, and it's before... I think it's before Philip mentions race, but he talks about being a federal agent, and Steve fake salutes him, and it's so funny.
He does do that.
It's before it turns like really, really ugly, that was something I was like, that's funny. That's good.
We go to tribal. One, ew, David. David shows up. He's clean.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Another weird, ritual thing about Survivor that is thrown out the window with Redemption Island is Jeff not saying, and David voted out the last tribal council, because he wasn't. Because
he wasn't.
It's just, and David.
And David. Jeff, immediately out of the gate. Another meditation, Philip? This outfit that you have donned? No, actually, it was a former zap.
Did Jeff not know about this blow-up? He seemed legitimately surprised about it.
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I would think he would know, or
maybe
at least
he's just
have
a good actor.
Yeah. Could be a little lad.
I mean, definitely, I think he didn't know about the pants being stolen. I don't think that information got to him in time.
Yeah, someone thought it would be funny to steal my clothes. And I could tell Steve took my clothes. I know, using my skills as a
former special agent.
Former special agent.
Take a shot every time Philip says former special agent in any episode, and you can get liver failure.
Yeah, it's all a war between two tribes right now.
Yeah.
And Steve goes, we chose to use our rice as we want. Andrea tries to fill in more of the gaps. It's frustrating to watch them eat so much food when we have so little. But again... It's kind of where we set ourselves.
You gave them nothing to lose, so they have nothing to lose.
And then we bring it back to this conversation. And Philip says he doesn't want to say the N-word, so he says crazy. And brings up an interesting argument of the Richard Pryor movie that N-word is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about this movie.
Me either.
But I... should do some research and really dig in on this. And then Jeff kind of takes all of the... He's trying to, be really good about this. He's trying to be therapist.
And I think he does a really good job.
He does.
I said that of, there's a lot of ways Jeff could have stepped in it. I think there's only really, one moment that Jeff does, which is with Steve, where he says, I'm paraphrasing. He basically goes, Steve, you don't want to be seen as racist, but if it means that Philip goes home, then, And I went... Jeff, I know what you're going for. I think you could have maybe let that one cooked in your brain a little bit longer before you said it. But listen, I've been there. I probably did that this episode.
Yeah. Philip then, in a way to try to relate to all of this, all right, Jeff, you don't know what it's like to be a woman. And my immediate thought was, Philip, you are not the messenger for this one.
Almost every time Philip opens his mouth this entire season, I've used this analogy before, but it's like a tiny plane just going through a fucking thunderstorm, trying to make a landing in the rain that's going sideways, and you're like, dude, are you gonna find this runway?
It's a good analogy, and one that brings good perspective, but from the wrong mouth.
Considering how he talks to the women, yeah.
Yeah. And he then goes on to tell the story about the counter at the store and how he was one of, I think he said 57, I don't remember the exact number, a certain number of employees and the only African-American in his job.
Yeah.
It's isolating.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I go back to the chatterbox thing. And actually, we didn't touch on it from Lilith's email. We forgot the confessional that Philip has.
Uh-huh.
Of talking about how I'm paraphrasing here. I think he says something along the lines of how that black men snap, and then he mimes pulling out a gun and shooting a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And it's wow, boy, if anybody that wasn't black did that, it would just be super racist.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's how Philip thinks that everyone is perceiving him. But I don't think anybody perceives him that way. I said it earlier in the season, but I don't think people see Philip as the harmful stereotypes of a black man. I think they see him as a cop. They see him as, because all he does is talk about how he's a federal agent.
Uh-huh.
He's overcorrected so far. He's so afraid of being seen as a criminal because he probably was growing up. He had to fight that all the time, that he's still fighting those people that saw him that way. And these people met you 20 days ago and all they know you as is a guy who runs around screaming about how he's in Stealth R Us and a former federal agent.
Yeah, but it's giving, and again, I'm going to try to tread around this very lightly. It's giving, like, overcorrecting to the point of, like, I'm not like them.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's like this dog whistle that will go, like, African-American Republicans have used for a long time. Where, like, oh, no, I can be the, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not token, but...
I mean, it's almost taking the, like, how sometimes, like, people will be like, oh, you're one of the good ones. It's,
yes.
It's almost like taking that and being like, see, I'm one of the good ones.
Yes.
And, it, like, again, I don't think, from everything we've seen, unless there's stuff behind the scenes that we don't see on camera, like, I don't think anybody thinks that about you, Philip. And, like, I don't think Philip needed Survivor. I think Philip needed therapy.
Yeah. But...
And that's not the first time I've said that about a contestant.
Yeah. And Steve trying to defend his not racism gives a not stellar performance here.
It's tough. I like, Steve does not do a good job, and just because you were in the NFL does not mean you were not racist.
I played for the LA Raiders for a time, and there were only 1/5 of the team that was white.
I think, like, Oakland Raiders, but yeah.
They were LA for a little bit.
Were they really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
I don't know. LA has had so many football teams at this point. Yeah, not a good look, Steve. Like,
no.
The sentiment of, no, my friend is black.
I know. I want to try to give Steve a tiny, tiny, tiny modicum of grace of, like, wow, it is really hard, like to make this argument, I guess, of, like, this is a weird spot for Steve to be in from an argument that, again, like, by the facts leading into it, Steve was in the right, in my opinion, about the rice and all of that. And then trying to defend it more broadly, like, the more... I think shutting up is the only thing you can do. The more you talk, the worse it gets.
The worse it got.
Yeah.
I mean, people are coming out and defending Steve, basically being like, Natalie says, I don't think that there is prejudice there from Steve. When someone from the other tribe is basically being like, I think Phillip's maybe in the wrong here.
Yeah.
It's hard not to jump on that bandwagon and be like, the show is kind of framing it in a certain light.
I also want to point out that, like, white people in 2011, I don't think we're as good at talking about it as now.
Clearly.
From a lot of, like, national, like, we've had a lot of, like, national conversations. We've been through George Floyd. We've been through the Black Lives Matter protests. Like, if Steve took that same framework and said, like, I have worked in a very diverse field for a long time and I value the experiences that I've had with those, like, that is the same thing Steve's saying in a better, from a better perspective, from a better mindset than just saying, I have a black friend.
Yeah. So Jeff kind of takes this all in and is like, all right, so what I'm hearing is that we have two people from different worlds who had an argument and took it different ways. And it's quite possible that both of you are telling the truth in this situation, and your truth is what you're feeling here. And we don't know how each person thinks and feels, and that makes it difficult in this situation.
And this is why diversity in casting is important. If there was a couple more people of color that Philip could talk to about this probably wouldn't be a thing. I mean, he did vote one of them out, but it's like, there shouldn't have only been one other person that he could have identified with on this level and talked to about this.
Right. On the flip side, he shouldn't have to feel bad for voting out the only other African-American
person. No, of course.
Because that's not his responsibility to bear.
Sorry, that might have come off wrong. I didn't want to forget that Francesca was on the season at all.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, okay.
I guess I'm trying to be overly fair in that, but you're right. No, it is not his responsibility to just be like, well, I have one more person that has some shared life experience with me in some minor ways, different generation and all of that, like, it makes it even harder. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, and jumping back to the Natalie conversation, she says, not only I feel for Steve, but I feel for Philip because I don't know what it's like to be an African-American man. Mm. So we're trying to play the balance here.
It's so crazy that all this happened after 2008 because that's when we solved racism. That's a joke. Don't clip that.
Anyway, Jeff goes, all right, this was good therapy.
Yeah.
But we have one unsolved problem. who stole the shorts?
Yeah. I want to mention like one thing he phrased to Philip in particular that I thought was just very, very good of Jeff, of like, nobody, it was, I think I'm paraphrasing slightly again, but like, nobody can discredit how you took it. Like, yes. Philip, nobody here is trying to say that you're wrong for feeling that way. And honestly, by the, like, through a lot of this tribal, like, after, like, once Jeff gets involved, Philip almost looks like, I don't know, maybe I'm reading into it, but, like, almost, like, a little ashamed of, like, how, like, there's something on his face, or, like, regret, or, like, it doesn't, a lot of times when Philip's been in tribal, he's looked very standoffish, and this time it felt like he was very, like, he looked very reflective, and, like, oh, I might have flown off the handle a little too much. I don't know. I'm interested to see what next episode brings, because Steve didn't get voted out.
Correct.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Julie responds to the who hid the shorts. I did. It was me.
Why did she say anything?
So gleeful.
Actually, you know what? I know why she said something, because she wanted to save Steve a little bit.
I mean, that, and also prove Philip like wrong.
That's true.
In his, he was adamant that Steve stole the shorts through all of his training and his secret agentness.
Maybe that's why he looked that way, actually. Maybe that's why Philip looked that way, because he's having a crisis of confidence because he was wrong about who stole the shorts.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we had that one question that basically ends it of, hey, would you be okay being considered racist to win the game? And like,
if it gets Philip to go home, are you cool with that?
Jeff, come on, dude.
Steve's like, how? I mean, I don't remember what he says, but his vibe is like, how do I answer that, dude? Like, what do you want from me?
There's nothing. There's nothing you can do there. And then we vote, and Julie is voted out on a 6-3 line.
Yeah.
Guess you're never going to find your shorts.
That's fucked up, man. I don't want to see Philip's dong the whole rest of the show. Why did Julie do this to us?
All right. Anything else you want to say? This has been an interesting discussion. And
yeah.
I encourage feedback. I encourage, like, email in, particularly that one person who said who got on us about our music tastes.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I just want to, I don't know. I hope I didn't, I hope, I'm very self-conscious right now about having run to the defense of the white side of this argument.
Yeah.
But there's just so, it's not like I haven't been frustrated, and everyone, it's not like everyone has been frustrated with Philip through the entire season and the way that he treats people.
No, and I think we've shown at least enough skepticism in CBS's ability to do storytelling.
Yeah.
That we know that all of this could be like a misdirection. I don't think it is.
18, or I guess 19 seasons till they start having more diversity, Steven.
But I have to open up to, there's a possibility that we're not getting all of the information here.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm so excited to get canceled, man. Bring it on. No, please don't. Please don't.
Don't do that. I'm gonna end this.
Yeah. This was harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I thought, I joked at the beginning of like, we made it through Cook Islands, but like, it was easier when the white people were just all wrong.
Yeah.
That was actually way easier, man.
Let's shut her down. Bumper. That'll do it for this interesting episode of Survivor Turn Back Time podcast. We've solved it.
Did we solve, Steven?
We fixed the world.
Sure.
Everyone who listens to this podcast is a better person now.
If this is the first episode you've ever listened to us, you listen to at least one more. I promise you.
One.
Yeah. Find a different episode, not a different podcast.
Anything you'd like to promote today, Jared?
My foot in my fucking mouth. I don't know, man. No, Pathologic 2. Have I talked about this game to you before? Have I talked about it on mic?
Nope.
So Pathologic 3 just came out. I haven't played it. I don't know anything about it yet. Pathologic 1. So this is, it's like a weird Eurojank game. Eastern European. That seems my sweet spot, is like Eastern European games for some reason. This one is another one that, like, with Disco Elysium, I said, like, it takes place in a fictional world. This one takes place in a world much more similar to ours. It might even be based on Earth, but regardless, its location, to me at least, is unknown. It's, like, steppe-inspired, so, like, Eastern Russia, Mongolia kind of setting. I don't even know how to describe it. It's, like, basically you have 12 days to solve a plague that's coming through town. There are no good choices. There are only less bad choices. It's very, meta breaking in terms of like there is a like the whole thing is also like a play with like actors in black morph suits with like white masks that will break the fourth wall and talk to you. There, it's brutally difficult. It's a kind of a survival game, kind of an RPG, kind of a mystery game. You don't need to play the first one. The second one is both a sequel and a remake of the first one. I don't know how it's both.
Sure.
The first one, you have three different character options. This time you have one, but those three characters are there, but it's also the same, I think the same actions or the same like arc, but a different story, like alternate universe. It's, I don't know, man. I love it. It's weird. It feels bad to play, but in a way that like feels intentional.
Mm.
Anyway, that's what I got to promote. What about you, Steven?
I'm going to promote goofy TikTok personalities. I know we're off season for NFL, but a couple people you should, if you're not watching, Mega Casuals, the guy who does the injury demon, I think is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And the shirt that I'm wearing right now from Drew Allen, the guy who does, and we're the Cleveland Browns. I don't recommend buying things from TikTok and TikTok shop because I don't want TikTok getting all of your information. But I ordered from his website where I got this and we're the Cleveland Browns shirt. Obviously, it doesn't say Cleveland Browns because he does not have the license for that, but it has his face and the acronym. I just think it's delightful.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. For my co-host, Jared, this is Steven.
My host, Steven, this is Jared.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. I hope this is our last episode.